Country Why on ABC Radio.
Support businesses are going to go to the wall just like dairy farmers will.
We've seen the whole agricultural community come out.
Once people leave communities, they generally don't return.
Countrywide.
Don't worry about me. Go and speak to your farmers.
We're already losing businesses.
Get out there and speak to your farmers today. And be gumbo.
Countrywide. The politics of food and farming on ABC Radio.
Hello, I'm Kim Honan and welcome to Countrywide. Coming up on the program, Australia's largest dairy cooperative is asking its customers, including the major supermarkets, to increase the price of milk or be dropped. A record grain harvest worth almost $7 billion for farmers in Western Australia. How a once bustling town is now dying without water allocations.
We're seeing farmers, you know, struggling for survival. We've seen those margins eroded. We've seen the community shrink and suffer. We've seen jobs disappear. We've seen opportunities for young people disappear.
And should cotton exports be banned? I'm Kim Honan and this is Countrywide. But first, the Banking Royal Commission has handed down 76 recommendations as part of its year-long investigation into the sector. The federal government says it will take action on all recommendations, which includes some sweeping changes to rural lending. Treasurer Josh Frydenberg.
There will also be major changes to how the banks deal with distressed agricultural loans. This will include a new national farm debt mediation scheme, a requirement that banks do not charge default interest on agricultural loans where a drought or national disaster has been declared. The valuation of agricultural land will need to be independently determined from the lending processes. Banks will be required to ensure distressed farm loans are managed by people experienced in agriculture, and receivers are only to be appointed as a remedy of last resort.
Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg. Well, heads have started to roll since those findings of the Banking Royal Commission were released earlier this week. Both the National Australia Bank Chair and CEO are now both leaving the organisation. John Fain from ABC Melbourne spoke to Bill Mott, a Queensland farmer who lost his farm to the NAB and gave evidence to the Royal Commission.
The only way I got to meet with him directly was in Canberra at a Senate inquiry where the senators, about nine senators from all over Australia, got to grill the CEOs of all the banks. So I was there for a week before NAB got on, so I was able to talk to some of these senators and they actually used some of my evidence in the questioning of Andrew Thorburn, so he made it his business then to meet with me.
And what was it? What was that like?
Oh, it was a fantastic meeting. He's got the gift of the gab, but nothing happened. Like, they still denied everything I said. And, you know, eventually they put a process in place where they employed Jeff Kennett, the ex-premier of New South Wales, to...
Victoria.
To arbitrate these, you know, there was about 30 of us bank victims with NAB. And that's just been a harrowing process. Like, he was selected because he'd, you know, he'd arbitrated that Coles business a year or so ago, and he was head of Beyond Blue, and they had this media thing saying that he'd be a great bloke to represent these bank victims. Well, you know, he just hasn't been understanding at all in his dealings with anyone that I know of. He's been very unsuccessful. So, you know, just getting back to the dismissal of Andrew and of Ken Henry, like, I think it's only the start. I think there's going to be more because they were obviously stood out in the Royal Commission because of their attitude. But you've got to remember that they're all doing the same things. Like, this is so systemic in the banking culture that they're all guilty of all these things. It's just that these two people were so arrogant that they just couldn't even say what the commissioner wanted them to say.
When you met with him personally, what was your appraisal? You said he had the gift of the gab, but did he sincerely and genuinely care? Was he interested in your predicament?
My God, yes. I couldn't believe it. I was so overwhelmed with what he said to me, you know, that it was going to be managed at the top and they were going to do all these things to look into it. Like, they can't even find all my files. Like, I found all this out since the process that they're going through, and they're saying they haven't done anything wrong. They haven't even been back through my stuff. They're just saying that. It's quite crooked, the whole thing. But, you know, as far as the National Bank goes, there's 11 board members, and it's been on a downward spiral for over 10 years, that bank. So you would imagine at least half of those board members have got to go because they're the ones formulating the policies. And Ken Henry has come out and said that there's gaps in their process. Well, they have policy and process and practice, and there's gaps. That just means that the gap between management and staff is not functioning.
That was Queensland farmer Bill Mott speaking with ABC Melbourne's John Fain. This is Countrywide. Well, a stroll down the main street of Finlay in southern New South Wales is all it takes to see the impact the Murray-Darling Basin plan is having. Once bustling retail outlets are now empty, a much-loved pub has been boarded up for almost a decade, and the shops that have managed to survive are only just making ends meet. The problem, according to the locals, is simple. Zero water allocations for the area's farmers. Courage Jeffrey reports.
Finlay has a population of about 2,000 people, and agriculture is the main contributor to the economy. But both have taken a hit in the past decade. Without water, farmers are struggling, and the flow-on effects of that struggle are being felt throughout the tight-knit community. Lachlan Marshall, a dairy farmer near Finlay who milks 900 cows three times a day, has spent $400,000 in the past 3 months buying water.
12 years ago when we moved to the region, we moved here because of water security and land prices. Water on the temporary market was $40 to $80 a megalitre, and we saw allocations of 80% and above. In the 12 years since, we've seen dwindling allocations, particularly since the Murray-Darling Basin Plan has been implemented. We've seen water prices jump astronomically. The average price in a good year is ranging from $150 to $250 a megalitre. And in a tough year like this, we're looking at water $500 to $550 a megalitre, which is just unsustainable.
Mr. Marshall said he had watched as farms disappeared from the area in recent years and had no doubt the Murray-Darling Basin plan was to blame.
We're seeing farmers now, you know, struggling for survival. We've seen those margins eroded. We've seen the community shrink and suffer. We've seen jobs disappear. We've seen opportunities for young people disappear. It is... been a massive impact on the community's bottom line. We're irrigators. Without irrigation in this region, it turns back into sheep paddocks with burr and salt bush. And that's not productive ground. It's a food bowl going to waste.
Zero water allocations coupled with the extremely high price of water is exactly why rice growers Ange and Murray Urquhart chose to grow corn rather than rice for the first time this summer.
We do enjoy growing rice, and it's a good crop to grow and that has good benefits. So we just looked at how much water we had and how much we could secure before the 1st of July. And then as the seasons progressed, I think we sort of, 1st of July, we sort of thought, oh, we'll do this, and if we get more water, we'll put more crop in. But as the seasons progressed and we've sat on zero allocation, we've just had to sort of put in what we could with the water that we knew we'd secured. So, yeah, definitely no rice.
If rice uses 12-plus megs a hectare and corn uses 8-plus, the weight maximum usually, well, if we have to go and buy that water, it's not as much water to outlay, the money to outlay to buy that water. So it's come back to that this year.
Berrigan Shire Mayor Matt Hannan says job losses are a huge issue for the people of Finlay.
This community was built off the back of irrigated agriculture and, you know, we don't have any water. For over a period of time, in the last 10 years, there's been over 600 jobs lost from this area. And agriculture, obviously, is one of our biggest employers. And if we don't have any water, well, we don't have any opportunity to grow any of our crops or feed our cattle.
Third-generation butcher Ashley Haynes says attracting people to the town is not easy. He has been looking for an apprentice butcher but is struggling to get any interest in the job.
It's really hard to try and recruit somebody into the town at present, so we're having a real issue with that. My staffing numbers have gone from 4 down to 3, well, 2 permanents and a casual, and I'd like to increase that, but I just can't find anyone that's interested in the trade at the moment.
Councillor Hannan's biggest worry is that the worst is yet to come.
My understanding is we're not going to get an allocation next year as well, so it's going to be next year and beyond that are really going to test the mettle and the resilience of communities like Finlay. We just want the opportunity to be able to, you know, do what we do best. And by having zero water allocation, I mean, last August, if they had had some water to finish off their crops, then we would have had a reasonable harvest and we would have been able to grow some hay for our animals to be able to survive. we didn't get an allocation, so therefore the cropping was lost, and obviously, you know, dairy farmers have had to close their gates and sell their stock off. Farmers have had to destock their herds. I talk to a lot of farmers, and farmers say they don't want to be water traders, they just want to farm.
Berrigan Shire Mayor Matt Hennon ending that report from Cara Jeffrey. Well, still on water, should Australia grow irrigated cotton? It's a question being hotly debated at the moment. Senator Rex Patrick from Centre Alliance wants the industry to justify its use of water and its right to farm. And he plans on introducing legislation which proposes a ban on cotton exports.
We live on the driest continent on the planet, and yet we are using our precious national water resource to produce a water-intensive crop, which we then simply export overseas such that foreign entities can profit.
But we use water for all sorts of crops which we export.
We do, but the magnitude of water that is used for cotton is significant. So 27% of the entire allocation of irrigation water across the Murray-Darling goes to cotton.
That is Senator Rex Patrick from Centre Alliance speaking with Dominic Schwartz. Meanwhile, cotton growers outside of the Murray-Darling Basin say they're frustrated their industry is being tied up in the fish kill debate. Nigel Burnett is one of those growers. He farms around Emerald and he's not happy. He's speaking here with Amy Phillips.
I think it should be called out for what it is. It's just a cheap, uninformed political stunt. As a farmer, you know, I see it as an attack on not just the cotton industry, but also irrigated agriculture and agriculture in general.
Has he got a point, though? Is cotton, you know, cotton's a really water-intensive crop, isn't it? Why should Australia grow it?
Look, we dispute that as a water-intensive crop. In the scheme of things, compared to other crops, it's more middle of the road. It's a desert plant that is, you know, it's water-efficient and suits the Australian climate. It's the most economic crop to grow. It's a flow-on effect that passed through the community seven times. It's not just cotton industry or farming that's involved here. It's the viability of the rural and regional areas.
Are you worried in any way that Senator Patrick's legislation could gain some momentum and become a reality at this point?
Yeah, I think, Amy, it's the political climate at the moment is so unstable, and, you know, for something like this to find some traction, you know, hopefully the community can consider the facts rather than emotive political rhetoric that's been given out by Senator Patrick at the moment.
You're the Deputy Chair of Cotton Australia. Has that peak body done enough to put forward its perspective during this, what's been quite a long debate in the last couple of months about cotton and its import into the likes of the Murray-Darling?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has been a long debate. I think from the farmer's perspective, Cotton Australia's been on the front foot on this and, you know, trying to get a facts-based argument into the argument. Okay. Unfortunately, that other groups, green groups, don't have the same thinking. They're just looking for emotive arguments, and unfortunately, those things can take traction, you know, within the city. So I think, you know, we've been on the front foot. You know, just social media, traditional media have, you know, trying to get those facts out there, and certainly not a fight that we want to have. It's, you know, this is more about a drought. Like, it's pulling the cotton industry out of the ag scheme in Australia is not going to get water back in the river. That's the issue. You know, it's a serious drought that we're dealing with at the moment.
Queensland cotton grower Nigel Burnett.
From the paddock to the plate, Countrywide on ABC Radio.
And this is Kim Honan with you. Well, who could forget the strawberry needle scare of 2018? Well, a report on the response to the discovery of strawberries deliberately spiked with needles has called for improvements to be made by police, government and industry. Food Standards Australia New Zealand has made 7 recommendations, including that all jurisdictions review their food incident response protocols and that traceability measures within the horticulture sector need to be strengthened. Jennifer Nicholls spoke to Chief Executive Officer Mark Booth.
Should emphasise, you know, this was an incredibly rare event. Food in Australia is incredibly safe. You know, we've got the safest food system in the world, probably. But if somebody is intent on doing something like this, it can be difficult to stop it, and all we can do is ensure that we can put as many processes and procedures in place to try and guard against it.
Mark Booth, what are the guts of the recommendations you've made?
Essentially, we are recommending that all jurisdictions across the country review all of their protocols to make sure that they've got those, in particular those links with police, are in place. We're recommending that we take a good look at traceability issues and there's probably a need for more investment in terms of research into traceability and the use of IT systems in traceability. We're recommending that we look at our national protocols, because there are national protocols agreed for when an incident happens, but there's a bit of a grey area in terms of those national protocols when there's a criminal activity involved.
Food Standards Australia New Zealand recognised the complexities of the strawberry supply chain, involving a small number of large growers who have barcoding systems in place to track back punnets to the people who pick and pack them, and a large number of smaller growers who may not have that technology in place.
The way the horticulture sector and the strawberry area is regulated is that there's no requirement to actually register farms. So that made it difficult for authorities to actually trace back and find out where the needle tampering actually occurred in the first place. And we're also recommending that when a food tampering incident occurs across jurisdictions, that you do get a central agency engaged to make sure that there is that national coordination.
Mark Booth's team noted that a decade ago, funding was cut, closing Fresh Produce Watch, a national scheme intended to play a proactive role in crisis preparedness, risk management and communication. Without it, Strawberry Industry Development Officer Jennifer Rowling found herself swamped with an avalanche of calls.
Personally, being, you know, sort of thrust into the front of something of that scale was incredibly difficult. So to have someone to go to immediately to coordinate the communication and the key messages and where we go from there would be an absolute godsend.
Jennifer Rowling says industry was blindsided by the tampering claims, finding out by text that Queensland Health and Police were holding a media conference.
It took us well and truly by surprise. And therein, you know, if we had been given the heads up and sort of had warning that something was going on and we really needed to address it and get our facts straight and know exactly what was going on, we could have been so much better prepared for the response.
The report raised questions about the cost and practicalities of measures like tamper-proof packaging that could reduce strawberry shelf life and metal detectors when other contaminants could be used. Jennifer Rowling says health authorities, police, supermarket chains and industry are reviewing processes and the supply chain.
A lot of it does come down to communication in the first instance to make sure that the messages are handled correctly and we don't have another situation of these copycat cases happening.
And for every Facebook hoax, there were thousands more messages of support backing the Cut 'em Up, Don't Cut 'em Out campaign, proving just how social media can be a double-edged sword.
Jennifer Nichols with that story. Well, a dairy farmer in northern New South Wales has demanded his processor pay more for his milk or he'll stop supplying it. Shane Hickey from Kyogle wrote to Norco informing the dairy cooperative that as of the 4th of April, the price of his milk will rise to 70 cents a litre.
Pretty much I'm just sick and tired of getting no money. Like a couple of months ago, our base price was 47 cents, which is nothing, and I think it's up to about 52 now. It's not enough money to cover the input costs, the cost of the grain, electricity, hay, everything. It's not enough. Everybody knows it's not. We need to stop relying on waiting for the end customer to give us anything. We need to start from the start. And I've just said, right, I've had enough. This is what I want.
Are you locked into a contract? What if they can't pay that price by the 4th of April?
We're putting in plans to change if we need to, because I have to take care of my family. I have a mortgage. I have to take care of my three small kids and my wife. And the current situation is not good enough. Coles and Woolworths have shown their hand and that they're quite happy to underpay us and keep us as charities in that sense, as paupers. And I'm not prepared to continue to work for nothing.
Shane Hickey, who currently supplies milk to Norco, Australia's largest dairy cooperative. Well, the head of Norco, Greg McNamara, says the drought isn't over and they're asking their customers to increase the price of milk.
We've certainly putting a proposition to the retailers that we need significant price increases. The drought hasn't finished and to some degree it's actually worsened. Not to some degree, it has worsened. The crops that were planted, there was reasonable rain in October, so we had a very dry July, August, September. We had rain in October, people raced in and planted their crops, which was the right thing to do, and now they've failed. So people have not only spent the money to actually get a crop, they've actually lost that, and it is now quite significant. So most farmers would be full lot feeding, their cattle. So they're buying in very expensive products, not only from southern markets, but also from overseas now. And even things like molasses have become critically short. And there's talk of importing things like molasses from overseas. So the situation is very critical, and we need to take, and we are taking steps to drop customers off our list now that actually aren't prepared to pay the right price for milk. So that will play out over time.
Okay, so when you say customers, though, are you referring to customers like the big retailers like Coles, yep, like Woolworths? But you have a contract with Coles to supply, you know, Coles with home brand milk.
Yeah, so from time to time we've gone back to them and actually tried to renegotiate prices around that. So we did that in September, October and November. And they come forward on that. So that was good from their perspective. But we now think that the situation has deteriorated even further, and the ability for farmers to come back from this current drought is actually going to be quite significant. There are a lot of learnings that we've actually had from the 2002-2003 drought. And what we learned in the industry was looking at, as an Australian industry, then looking at an 11 billion litre industry. It's now fallen back to close to 8 billion, somewhere between 8 and 8.5 billion litres this year. And this drought, if it continues, we'll see that milk fall well below 8 billion litres, and it will put Australia at the risk of being not able to supply export customers. So it won't only be Australian customers that actually fall by the side, it'll be actually Australians' reputation to supply good quality dairy products to the world.
As a cooperative, what is Norco doing to support dairy farmers during the drought, during these low milk prices?
Yeah, so we've certainly put in some extended term accounts. We've had them for a while, what we call the extended offer accounts. So they're in place. We've certainly got our people out on farm. You know, we're certainly calling people that we think that need to have a, we need to have a chat to, just to actually have a bit of a chat. And then the next step is if we think that people have need to take a more professional approach, and not to say that if people aren't professional, but seek more professional counselling, then we certainly do that through our professional help program that we actually do. So that occurs, and I think Norco is one of the only dairy processors in Australia that I know of actually does that. So we have it for an employee assistance program for our employees, and now we now use that for our farmers to make sure that if they need ongoing support from a counselling perspective, they can get that.
And how are you going? You must certainly feel the weight of the entire industry on your shoulders at the moment, but you're a dairy farmer struggling yourself.
Yeah, no, it's certainly a challenge. No, we're fully into it. We're full feeding our cows at the moment. We think we could be losing probably $500 a day at the moment, maybe $600 a day. That's a lot of money to actually lose. And when you know, like everyone else, and you're running out of water and your dams are low and you're not sure when the rain's going to come, it's very stressful. But we've got to be resilient. We've got to get back up. Australian farmers are very good at that. But that comes at a cost. And I think, yeah, it's just like my children. They look at what we go through every day, and they see the good times, but they remember the bad times far more than the good times. So I think that's a challenge for the industry going forward.
Greg McNamara, Chairman and Acting CEO of Norco, and a dairy farmer himself near Lismore in northern New South Wales.
You're listening to Countrywide across Australia and around the world on ABC Radio.
And finally today, farmers in Western Australia have closed the history books on their most valuable grain harvest ever this past season, worth almost $7 billion. The Grain Industry Association of Western Australia's final crop report has confirmed a final figure of 17.9 million tonnes, making the 2018 crop the second biggest on record. But profits for grain growers in the West have come at a cost to farmers in the East. John Daly reports.
Farming is a bit of a gamble at the best of times, and for many WA farmers, 2018 was a pretty lucky number. GEWA's final crop report author, Michael Lamont, says it's been an unusual year for plenty of reasons.
It was, you know, for a lot of growers, you know, once in a 20-year, once in a lifetime event. But it's in saying that, I mean, it was the unusual thing, I suppose, in 2018 was the areas that did go well, you know, were quite widespread across the state. So a lot of areas had not only a good year, but good prices. I mean, that can happen, you know, you can still get areas of the wheat belt that have good yields when the prices are good, but it's unusual to have it across the whole state.
Wheat and barley were the largest crops, yielding 10 million and 5.1 million tonnes each. And Robert Kitto was one of the farmers in the northern wheat belt and Geraldton regions who were among the big winners.
As far as production goes, it was right up there with some of our best seasons that we've had, but as far as production and price coming together all at the same time, it was way above where we had expected the outcome to be for this year, for this last year, for 2018.
Now, high yields and unprecedented demand rarely happen at the same time. And in his 35 years of farming, Mr. Kiddo hasn't seen a year like this.
It's a bit like getting a free kick in life to be able to springboard and get the confidence to push forward for another 5-10 years.
The almost $7 billion crop in the West was in no small way driven by the drought in the East. Famenco grain marketer Don McTaggart says that strong demand has lifted grain prices to their highest levels in a decade.
We're going to send as much grain as we've ever sent over to the East Coast this year, so looking at probably 3 million tonnes of wheat and 1 million tonnes of barley, and that number could increase.
And have you ever seen a combination of such good production and prices?
Short answer is no. Like 2008 was a pretty solid year from a production perspective, and prices were solid. So a lot of guys had a very good year that year, but this year is certainly one out of the box. Pretty much the further you go north, and particularly in the northern Kwinana and Geraldton zone, it's going to be a year where people will tell their grandkids about, I reckon.
But the year was not without its challenges. The start of the season was late, and spring brought damaging frosts and very little rain. Only about 100 millimetres fell on farms around the town of Lake Grace in WA's Great Southern, and for farmer Shane Carruthers, this year has been far from perfect.
Probably, I haven't been farming that long, but it's probably the second worst year I've had, yeah. Only averaged just a tonne. We never really got a normal break. You know, I think I put my crop in on 15 mil, I think, something like that.
You got hit quite badly by frost over
the
season?
Yeah, I had some of my program hit pretty badly by frost on September the 14th. And I think because it was under moisture stress, probably didn't help. As you know, it made it probably more susceptible. Probably the plus out of it is, you know, we know now that we can grow an average, maybe a little bit below average crop with minimal rainfall due to the new technologies, because in the old days you wouldn't have grown a thing.
Crop Report author Michael Lamond reckons WA farmers' ability to roll with the punches made all the difference in the end.
What really struck me, I suppose, is the ability for the growers to just change their practices and adapt to the season, you know, as they go, as the season unfolds. And it was quite amazing this year because so much of the crop sown dry created a lot of challenges, you know, just getting fertiliser on, getting spraying done on time, and the capacity of growers to get across the country is just amazing nowadays.
On the back of such a strong year, grain prices are expected to fall in the coming season. But farmers like Mr. Kiddo are pretty optimistic about their future.
Have to be. Everybody is extremely happy with the season, and yeah, a lot of confidence out there for moving forward.
Midwest farmer Robert Kiddo ending that report by John Daly. And that is it for Countrywide this week. Don't forget you can find our podcast at abc.net.au/rural. Just click on programs. Thanks for your company. Join me again next week. Have a great day.
Countrywide on ABC Radio.
I'm absolutely calling on the Deputy Prime Minister to pay attention to his own report.
Growers work from sun up to sun down, so
Countrywide.
We need to speak to these growers at 1 o'clock in the morning.
And to actually act on behalf of the farmers.
They're going to get it from the Yanks or the French or whoever. So let's get our foot in the door and let's be the first.
Countrywide, the politics of food and farming on ABC Radio.